Any comments or discussion? Points anybody would like to bring up? I like the seating arrangement. Some places it's really stiff and formal, and this is informal. It's nice. Yes.
Is there anything about, like, that you can say about, like, the quality of relationships? Because, like, when you're looking at the five levels, it seems that all of them are unequal in some sense.
All of them are what?
They're unequal, like, in servitude and, like, caretaker and child. And the only thing that's, like, really equal was friendship. And then, lover and woman. So I was just wondering what I think about.
I can't respond until I understand what you're asking. You're referring to the levels of relationships. The main message that I passed from Vedic wisdom is in each of the successive relationships, the previous thing is there. And then one component is added to that, adds another dimension to it. So your question was...
Is there anything about equality in those?
Okay. In all of them, they can be either pure or impure. That's using this adjective character. And then quality. So there can be a friend and a friend relationship where a friend is not really the friend, but they're exploiting the other person. Or, I'm your friend because you do this for me. And because you do this for me, I do that for you as your friend. And if you stop doing this for me, it's over. So it's not friendship, it's contractual. And where it's real friendship, it's not based upon I get something from the other person. It's the subject and the object. And I do something because I see this person as my friend. Because of that intimacy. To have that kind of an exchange where it's not contractual or broken when the currency isn't given from either side is when it's pure. It's not dependent upon what goes on over here. It's dependent upon, like that example from Mother Teresa, of not just, you know, not just husband and wife as it was being implied by a marriage counselor, but anyone. You're doing things to add value to other people's life and they can trash it, but do it anyways. And so on. It's just because it's about our relationship with God. And when that exists, then a serving relationship is completely satisfying. A conjugal relationship is completely satisfying. Friend-to-friend relationship is completely satisfying. So the quality can be either pure or impure. Yes?
You showed us the statistic about the United States and about crime rates and like that 35% of all marriages go apart in the next 15 years.
Yeah.
But for example, I lived half a year in Korea and I know, for example, their crime rates are very, very low. And like only 10% of all couples split up during their lifetime.
That's better.
Yeah.
Much better. There's statistics that are probably more crime and more divorce and less crime and less divorce. I was just giving, you know, because we're in the United States, statistics from here. And they're readily available.
But doesn't that mean like in some kind of way there it works, like how they live their life?
Well, they may have a more spiritual foundation to how they live their life. And little bit more materialistic over on this side. South Korea?
Yeah.
Here it is. Anything else? Yes.
I just wanted to say that it was a great presentation, and I think, I mean, personally, I try to practice these things, and I feel like it's easier to think about it, but when it comes to implementing, and especially like making it last, is the hardest part. And also, I feel like when you speak of relationships, any relationship, I feel like the other person, unless they are on the same page, it's tough to have that kind of internal exchange.
Yes.
So, I don't know if there's a way.
Theory and application are like what separates the men from boys, for the maturity from immaturity. Immaturity comes through trying to apply, staying steadfast to those values that you hold and principles that you know are true, and not just like yielding to what's convenient. It's more taxing. It's formidable work to stay with truth. But that promotes the quality of goodness. And the other part is that you said, yes, it's true. It's more difficult when other persons are not on the same page. But that's it's a good test for yourself, I find it. Because, you know, how much is what I'm doing circumstantial? And you change the circumstance, then it disappears. Because if it's circumstantial, substance is missing. And when substance is there, it's not dependent. In the language of the Bhagavatam. Without material cause, it's there. And without with no material interruption can check it. Cause and effect. What's something that's genuinely spiritual, it's not dependent upon the circumstance to generate it. And there's not a material circumstance that can stop it. Because it's spiritual. So those are good opportunities to examine yourself and, you know, realign your values in a challenging circumstance. It's a good opportunity. Life is filled with Yes.
What inspired you to devote yourself 40 years of spiritual work, and what motivated you to do that? That's quite a commitment.
Yeah. because I was asked this question at MIT last night. Now, what inspired me to get started? That's not what your question was. It was a quest for understanding what my convictions were. I'll give a little history, a little brief. I was in just finishing my undergraduate study and accepted to medical school. So my final year of undergraduate study moving on to medical school. And at home, my parents were getting draft notices from the government. Draft notice means 1A, Army wants you to join the United States Army, come show up for uniform, and they're going to put you on a plane and send you off to, in this case, to Vietnam. And I thought it was really stupid. Why would they take somebody out of medical school to send them off to that stupid thing? So I just didn't even pay attention to it. They kept sending the notices. And it started getting like, you know, if you don't, you'll come and arrest you. So my parents said, you better pay attention to this. So I did. I asked some advice, what do I do about something like this? And somebody said they're Quakers, a Christian group, very, like, you know, nice people. And they'll help you fill out a conscientious objector form that you tell the government, I can't take part in the United States, you know, war program for conscientious reasons. So the form says, first question in the form, state the nature of your belief in God such that you cannot take part in the armed forces of the United States of America. So, knowing how to get A's in exams and be on the dean's list and all that, I could easily answer the question and get free from the draft. But I didn't know how to answer the question to my satisfaction. What are my convictions? And that sent me for a loop. I said, what am I doing? I'm on this conveyor belt of life, you know, supposedly, you know, doing all the right things that your nice young boy's supposed to do. And I don't even know what my convictions are. There's something wrong with that. I want to know what my convictions are. I don't want to be, like, you know, at the fag end of life, looking back at a very busy career and family and blah, 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 and still not have an answer to that question. Because I know what medical school and residency and internship and then and practice and all the obligations. And, you know, I'm going to take time out now. I took time out to get answers that would satisfy me. And one thing led to the next thing, led to a very interesting journey. And practicing many different things, you know, in a very regulated standard that I had set for myself to just, I wasn't going to take anybody else's word for it. I wanted to know myself, experience with my own convictions, what my convictions were.
Kind of like
Star? Yeah, something like that. A little different. More contemporary, but like that. And of all the different things, the chanting of Hare Krishna that I read Hermann Hesse's writings and so many, of course, all those nice autobiography, the Yogi and Be Here Now, all those books that were contemporary at the time. Practiced Zazen, lived in a Zendo for a while, and lived in a Jesuit monastery for a while, and like not just like armchair, but actually did it. So I lived at a Krishna ashram for a while. It was here in Boston. It was a different place than the present temple location. It was in Alston. And I found it very satisfying. So, after a couple of years of doing that, because I had done that with the idea that I don't want to just be on the outside looking in, I want to experience it fully. What is it like to just fully absorb myself in dedication? So I did that. And then, light went on and said, okay, now you know what that's like. Now, do you want to continue with your medical studies or just continue doing this? And the thought process went, well, there's lots of doctors out there, and there's very few people doing this. Although I could also keep the same core and be a doctor and help people that way as well as this way. But there's lots of things I couldn't do as a doctor that I can do doing this. And I'm very happy. I'm not like feeling uncomfortable at all, wishing on something missing or something like that. So just continue. And it's a mood of service. I like serving others. and in a way that specifically addresses the needs of the soul, because there are lots of people dealing with the other stuff, but missing the needs of the soul, you're not going to really satisfy anybody. Temporarily something, good intention, but good intentions aren't good enough. There's still something that's missing, as there was with, I've been there, so I don't mind. So be a contributor to something that's, it's something's missing.
And when that something is missing,
I like, I'm continuing what I'm doing because I like serving people in that capacity of helping in whatever way that I can to bring attention to the soul's needs and the soul's connection with the Supreme and nurturing that with people that want that in their life. It's I'm happy serving in that way. Yeah.
One modification to which maybe to our modern day school system is they incorporate more of the self-discovery. I know there's schools like the modification is too high on the they tend to have more focus on discovering self. What would you suggest for
students? If I could design curriculum, what would I design like that? That's a nice question. Emphasis upon characters or qualities, and the recognition that character or qualities need a spiritual basis, otherwise they're not substantial. It's a behavior that's not real, it's not enduring. And how to get that spiritual basis or foundation? The Vedic model is, it comes in a descending fashion, not in an ascending fashion. So recognizing knowledge that's coming down, just as it describes in Bhagavad Gita, that coming down in descending succession, helping people to like turn the receivers on, tune into the spiritual channel of descending knowledge, and then like this comment that she made before, how to apply, because theory and application, often there's a big gap. One of the images that was shown here was by a bay, an ocean bay, and mountains on either side, and some person standing up in a boat. Going into natural settings where we're kind of like disconnected from all the technology and stuff that people are wired to and hooked to and addicted to, going a little bit offline from time to time, and it helps you to tune in, the more natural receiver channels. Basic spiritual practices. Just use the term sacred sounds. By tuning into sacred sounds that then awaken spiritual consciousness in a natural way, that's another Vedic conception. And even, different people doing it in different ways, the way they like to do it. But then applying that principle and supporting that. So descending knowledge, spiritual practices that connect with spiritual, with sacred sounds, and inculcating qualities or character that have a spiritual conception supporting them. Those are three things that I would want to see in Korea. There are schools that I'm... The pause there was because I teach at some of those places. And I don't write the curriculum. I just, you know, I'm invited to do this part, that part, another part. So, trying to think, you know, from the broader perspective, aside from what my part is, what's the curriculum made up of? Standard knowledge coming down into sentence succession and presenting it and showing by example of yourself how it can be done. And helping people, because they're individual, how they can apply it practically in their lives. More the hands-on than a concessional kind of education.
It's funny that I'm not very used to being there. Well, recently went to just a movie showing of a piece from them that had trouble with modern day educational systems that came through in the high school. They just had the image of the kids on the conveyor belt. They're just struck with being shown to be a convention asset. I really wanted to ask you for your videos. Thank you. I've been considering myself, but I appreciate your input on that.
Encouraging thoughtfulness, like, you know, looking inside and what's in there. Like, you know, and go deeper, go deeper, go deeper. What's in there? What's the animating force of life? Anything else? Okay. It went away? You had something?
No, I talked myself through it.
Okay. Okay. So.
So thank you all very much for taking time to come and spend this evening with us. And let us thank the journalist Mohammad Swami for visiting the campus.